is with Henry Novicki at 1112 Edgar Street in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Today is March 22nd, 1977.
When we first started talking to you, Henry, you said that your father came to the United States at the age of 18. Can you tell us how it was that he decided to come to this country at that age?
Well, where he was born was under Russian rule at the time, and the provision was that when a male, a boy, a child, got to be 18, he just reported to the military service, and his father anticipated that. And I don't know just what work the father was in, but apparently he had saved money anticipating to send the father over here. So he just told my father, we can't see any stability in this country here. I want you to get over into Germany, preferably Hamburg, which he did, get a ticket, get over to the United States and live there, never come back. And my father never did come back.
Now, when he left Hamburg, what destination in the United States did he
have? Well, he landed at Baltimore. Mm-hmm.
And how long did he stay there?
I don't know.
You don't know. Well, then, under what circumstance did he move elsewhere? Then where did he go from Baltimore?
Well, apparently he was in the hardcore regions of Pennsylvania, right around Mount Carmel, mm-hmm. Pottsville, maybe. There's other town, it's kind of at the border of the hardcore region, and the work there was kind of intermittent. But that's where he married my mother.
Now, was she living there already at the time?
Yes. My mother was two when she was brought over here.
Oh, she came over the age of
two. Oh, another thing, my mother and father were 10 years difference in age. When I was born, my father was 31 and my mother was 21.
And he had met her in this coal mining town.
Oh, as far as I know.
That's right. Well, this is fine.
I was.
Now, as you remember, did your father ever tell you about what it was like working in those coal mines there as far as making a living or anything? Do you remember anything about those early days that you were in Pennsylvania?
Well, I just barely remember a few instances because I was just over six when we came to Wyoming from Pennsylvania. But apparently the reason my father left there was because of the intermittent work, and there might have been a kind of a slowness in there, and he and other partners that he had. First I remember they went up to Erie, Pennsylvania to work. It's up on the lakes. Network didn't agree with him. He was a coal miner. And somehow he got work of, got word of work out in Wyoming. And he ended up in near Sheridan in Dietz, Wyoming. And he was there sometime before he got the family there. I mean, about a year or so.
And did he tell you how he came there? By what mode of transportation did he come to Wyoming?
Well, in those days, in 1980, it was a railroad.
Okay. And you think that he was working there for a while as alone before he sent for the family?
Oh yes, I know he was.
You know that was. When you came, do you remember coming there then?
Well, we came by train, and I don't even remember yet getting off the train. And that isn't all I remember. The camp was so full that we had to stay at the Beanery, the company hotel, and we stayed there a few days before they found an empty house for my father and my mother and myself and my sister. So there were just the four in the family then in 1908.
And they did find you a company house to live in. Now, could you tell us something about this company house?
Yeah. The town, the camp probably had 100 to 120 houses, and it was segregated in a sense. There was an English part of town, and a Slav part of town, an Italian part of town, and where my father must have had a pretty good reputation there as an industrious miner, because the first house that opened up was in an English section of town, and you might say that we broke the camp up in that segregation sense, and that they let us live in what we called Hospital Road.
That was the English speaking people. Mm-hmm.
And was that, were the houses there better, more comfortable than the houses that the
other people? No. That was a nice camp. You know, when we got there in 1908, they had electricity, and that was rare for a coal camp thing. We had it.
Yeah, electricity.
Somebody spent a lot of money.
And the water and that was outdoors.
Oh, yes. Outdoors, yeah, but it was there. You didn't have to go to the creek.
Now, you said that it was kind of segregated, each of the nationalities. Do you remember, did the kids mix right away, the children, or were they each playing in their own groups? How did you find that?
Well, I can't say what I noticed there, because I was just a kid of 6 years old, and what does a kid of 6 years old know?
Now, you were speaking what language?
Well, I just probably knew 20 or 30 words of English. I was Polish and Lithuanian. And believe it or not, I've completely forgot Lithuanian.
So then you must have spoke more Polish at your home then.
Well, yeah, my father was Polish, my mother spoke it readily. And my father really didn't speak Lithuanian. It was my mother's tongue, but she could speak Polish.
Now, when you started to school then, were you still, you know, speaking the Polish language?
Oh, yeah.
Mainly.
Sure.
How did you?
But soon after we started school, or you might say about the time we started school, my mother instructed my father, now, when we're talking to the children, we're going to talk in English. Between ourselves, we can talk in Polish. It was Polish, because my mother just talked Lithuanian and with other Lithuanian people.
Now, were there quite a number of other families there that were Polish, so that they could?
Oh, yeah, there was part of a number of Polish families.
And in your family home then, because of your father, did your mother try to cook more Polish dishes to please him?
No, you know what the women do. They cook what they like, and the husband has to eat that stuff.
Oh, well, now this.
My mother was from a poor family. Well, they had a lot of births, and they lost a lot of children. She was the second birth in a family of 13, and I think Grandma only raised 5 or 6 out of 13, and Grandpa was a liveryman. His income wasn't very high, and my mother enjoyed simple, inexpensive food. Maybe hold it up. They always had a garden, and a good garden, and I had to help with that garden. In fact, some people even felt sorry that I had to hoe and water and all that. But a little work like that don't help a young boy. Mm-hmm. And we always had a cow or two. And I never, what I did with a cow was round her up. We'd have her out in the edge of town. We didn't have a corral, a pasture for her. We just turned her out into the hills, and we were on a creek bed there. I'd have to go out and round this cow up of an evening for the evening milking, you know. And my father fed her real good, so she produced a lot of milk, and we sold milk. And we had all the milk and butter we wanted, and we even made ice cream. We made ice cream every day in the summertime, and probably every other day all winter. We just enjoyed milk and fresh stuff in the garden.
And what would you say that you had for breakfast as you remember as a child? I mean, just kind of an ordinary breakfast.
Well, my father, I don't know how he got it, he enjoyed boiled rice, and he'd have a bowl of boiled rice with a lot of milk and some cream in it, and some bread and butter and coffee. That was his breakfast, and I guess that was ours too. You see, you're talking about 60 years ago, and it's pretty hard for me to remember back 60 years that I had for breakfast.
It's all right, you're doing real well. And what about a lunch? Your father was working in the mine then, and what would the family do? Did you have a lunch that he took a bucket, I know, and then what would you do for lunch for the family? You just had, what would your mother fix you?
Well, we were, when I was going to school, of course, we'd have an hour and we'd come home. Our school was only maybe about a third of a mile away. And, you know, to a kid, a third of a mile don't take very long to. We didn't walk home, we more or less ran home. Right at the, you didn't ask about the house that we had.
I would want you to tell that. If you can, tell us what happened. You want to know what.
We had just a little three-room house, and then my mother had a younger brother that had handy as carpenter work. He came and put a lean-to on the side of the little three-room house that made a kitchen. And he brought water from the hydrant across the street, cold water. We didn't have any hot water except for the water that you got out of the reservoir on the kitchen stove. And right at the back door was a rip cellar, where we kept our potatoes and our carrots and sand, and my mother canned stuff in jars, the garden stuff. And I'll have to tell you too, my father enjoyed fresh pork. In that country there, the farmers would, when the weather got cold enough, would butcher. A farmer would come to town with a wagon full of either young hog carcasses or halves of larger hogs. My dad enjoyed getting that fresh pork, and my mother would render lard for 2 or 3 days out of the fat that she'd cut off of there. My father didn't care for smoked or pickled pork, but he did enjoy fresh pork. And if my mother had beef 2 days in a row, she'd hear about it. And another thing, apparently my father grew up in Europe to where goose was the main meat. At that time, if you raised a calf or a hog, that was something, I'm talking about over in Europe, that was something they could sell for some money. But goose was so common that that was a common meat, just almost like chicken is to us now. Now, when I was a boy, chicken was rare. Chicken was a Sunday treat. Now, chicken is the most common and good food.
Now, I'm going to just go off this a little bit. You mentioned something about the garden. Now, you were in a cold camp. Did you have, like a yard big enough, or where did you plant, the garden?
Oh, yeah, each house in our neighborhood had a kind of like a loft to it. It might have been like 120 or 40 feet deep and maybe about a 50-foot front on it. There was enough room there for a garden, a flower garden. And we raised everything. We raised corn and tomatoes, and beans, and of course potatoes, cabbage especially. My mother enjoyed sauerkraut. We had a wooden barrel, not a full wooden barrel, but it was cut down a little bit. And we'd cut cabbage to fill that thing with kraut. And we almost had kraut most every day. And when my mother would come up, I'm talking about my mother, she was only 30 years old, you might say. She'd come up, she'd have a handful of kraut in her hand, a bowl of kraut in the other hand. She just enjoyed it.
Now, did you or your wife learn how to make some of these foods that you're talking about? I mean, did you know how to make, sauerkraut?
I've never made sauerkraut now because we can buy it in cans. In those days, you could buy it in bulk. Our camp had a pretty good company store, and it had a pretty good border system, and it had good schools. So I'd have to put in a plug for my teachers. We only had two school buildings, and each school had two rooms in it. And what I want to tell about, there were two sisters there, old maid sisters. Their name was Jeffers, Anna Jeffers and Minnie Jeffers. And I often think of them as having quite an influence on my school life. I somehow got the knack of learning easily. And I don't know whether it was from something that those two sisters did to my early teaching.
I'm sure that they instilled it, but I also feel that it was in you to brought it out.
I could just sit down and just concentrate on the doggone thing and just read it like people would read a novel. Then I'd go to school. And especially when I got to high school, I wouldn't even raise my hand. If they wanted to know if I knew something, they could call on me, and I always knew it. It got to be a game.
You were good people.
Well, I was an easy student. And I wish that, if I'd have got into teaching, I'd have probably had to follow out something to where I could find out why it was so easy for me, out of other family that my mother raised, just Victoria is the only one that kind of had a little knack at it. The other boys and my sister that I grew up with, Amelia.
Now, did they have the same teacher?
Oh, yes. But they just didn't have the knack. I just read it and I had it. And then they'd have to dig and dig, and then when they go to class.
Well, what would you say, you know, was the most interesting thing that you did at school? Like, I mean, you were there to study, but was it also, did the teachers also make it fun, you know, for you?
Well, apparently they did, because I always waited for school to start. Of course, I waited for vacation to start, but vacation was half over and I was ready to go back to school. Well, I enjoyed going to school.
You were a good student. Now, at home, you said that your parents were encouraging the children to talk English, and they talked English to you.
Oh, yeah, these.
So then did you forget the Polish then?
Oh, yeah, I didn't use it because, well, I talked English, and English was in school.
Were your teachers patient with you, you know, when you were learning the English language? They were very helpful.
Especially, one of these sisters was, these Jeffers sisters was in one of the classes, in one of the rooms where she had the first and second grade. And she had many children that were just like my sister and I, that knew very little English.
And then there were also other children that perhaps were talking Italian or something else.
Yes, sure.
And you all got along just real well.
Well, we didn't have any great difficulties. Of course, I'm talking about first, second, third graders. And I don't remember any conflicts or anything like that. We didn't have any gang fights. Now, they tell me some of them are having rock fights here in Rock Springs, like Art Woodward talks about.
Well, did you know, when you were going to school, and you went to this two little schools that you mentioned,
Two school buildings, and they weren't together, they were separated by the...
And then
one was a two-story school, so we call that the high school.
Oh, so the high school, that's what I was trying to ask you, that was the high school.
No, it was a two-story building.
The campus big enough then that you had two schools, is that
it? We had two school buildings with two rooms each, and each room had two classes. We only had four teachers.
Okay, then, now, after you got past elementary school, you know, grade school, and then, say when you got like in seventh and eighth grade, where did you go? Was that still in those school buildings?
Oh, yes, we were. We had eighth grade right there in that camp in those two school buildings, in those four rooms.
And then, now, did you have maybe like an eighth grade graduation or anything? I've got to ask. Ceremony when you passed?
I don't remember any ceremony. But we used to have something on the last day of school. Even when we were little tykes in the first, second, third, fourth grades, we'd have little recitations, little verses that we'd memorize. And I've got an event. At one of these, the school where the first and second, third and fourth grades attended. Now that must have been about 1910 or 11. The last day of school, we were having this little program, and the mothers were in one room, and that's where all the children were. And the other room was used to group the children for the next little piece on the program. And an awful rainstorm came up, and believe it or not, about 10 feet away from the corner of that empty room, the lightning struck one of two trees, cottonwood trees, and believe it or not, those two trees are still there. One is a great big full tree, and the other is a bent over little cripple that was struck the lightning.
Now, when you went to high school, then where did you go? Did you have to leave the camp?
About 1910, there was a street railway system put in that little town of Sherry. Cheyenne had a street railway system. They were the only two towns that ever had streetcars. And just outside of Sheridan to the northwest there was a military garrison post called Fort McKenzie that is now the Veterans Hospital at Sheridan. And there was a branch line rink there to serve the soldiers to come to town. And there was an interurban line that was built from Sheridan to all the coal camps but the last one, the last camp of Croyd. It didn't quite get that far. It ended at Munger. In the 4 years I went to high school, I rode that interurban. It cost my father $1 a week for a ticket to ride that interurban. And I'd leave home at 7:30 in the morning, and at 8 o'clock I'd be up at the high school, and that's where I'd do my homework from 8 to 9.
You'd go on in the building and...
Oh yes, I could go into the building and I'd do my homework. I never carried anything home from high school.
And then how long were you there, you know, at school? I mean, you know, during the
day? Well, the car left Sheridan on even hours. They just make a round trip every 2 hours, but they take their time. It was only about 10 miles, 10 or 12 miles, total length of the track, and then 10 miles back. But it would leave on 2 and 4, and if I could arrange my schedule to where I could get the 2 o'clock car, I'd take the 2 o'clock car and go home, and then I had a job at the store filling shelves.
No, with the company store.
Mm-hmm.
And then how late would you be there?
I'd be home for supper. And supper was usually by 6 o'clock.
Now, your dad was still working in the coal mine.
Oh yeah, he always worked.
He always worked in the coal mine. Did he, this time now, he's working in the mines in Wyoming, did he tell you anything about the conditions in the mine? And did he say anything about working, you know?
They were always critical, you know, because anybody who runs a coal mine, it's just like anybody who runs the business, they're going to do it as cheap as they can. That was one reason why they were killing so many here, you know. A lot of it, you know, is work that should have been protective work, and it cost money, and it just wasn't done, and pretty soon somebody could get hurt. And now they've got laws where they more or less protect the work.
Now, your father was working in the coal mine.
Now, he was just
working hard.
Just a miner.
What was his feeling towards you, or what was your feeling as to plans in high school? What did you want to do?
There were no plans. I was a boy, and he didn't want me to go in the coal mine.
And he was just sending me to school.
Okay,
now that's what I wanted to know. Because he was working in the mine, and he worked hard, no way were you
just
going to be in the
mine. They were that way then, and they still are that way now.
And before I forget, I want to ask you just one thing. When you were talking about, you know, riding the train or...
The interurban car.
Yes, going into school. Were there any other young people your age doing the same thing?
Not many. I don't know whether there was anybody from my camp. There might have been at intervals, you know, but nobody that rode the 4 years when I went. But there were two sisters and two brothers from the next camp down at Acme, where Goose Creek ran into Tongue River, the main stream. They rode for 4 years.
So usually did the children then, did they just quit school after the 8th grade normally?
It was an expense to send the kids to school. Mm-hmm. Now some farm families, the mother would sometimes move to Sheridan and keep house. You know, just like Mrs. Bowman did up there in Yellowstone Park. When her kids went to high school, and she moved down to Livingston.
So they could go to school.
So she kept house for them there. But we had this handy interurban. As I say, it only cost my father $1 a week, but $1 a week then was pretty big money. I enjoyed it. You know, some of my best teachers were in Sheridan High School. When I got down to the University of Wyoming in 20 and 21.
Well, what did you decide to, you know, like you went to Sheridan High School and, you know, you were there and you say you enjoyed it. Can you tell us just, you know, some of the things that you did that you may not remember some of the subjects that you took, you know, at that time?
Well, I didn't take any language because at that time they were kind of, I did start taking German, and that was in 1914 that they burned the German books there, and I didn't care about taking Latin, and nobody was forcing me to take anything, so I didn't take any language. And then, too, I guess from my natural background, where I had contacted other languages, but no one trusted I'd take another language like French. Well, I guess French and Spanish and Latin were the only other languages.
So when did you decide then, you know, to that you were going to, say, leave where you were living and go to the University of Wyoming?
About the time that I left, that I graduated from high school, now there was a ceremony there. And who do you think got the best prize for the best scholarship?
You were the highest in your class,
oh, sure.
You were what, did they call it valedictorian then?
It was some name, valedictorian or some other thing. But
you were the outstanding
student. About that time, right. This coal mine of ours shut down, and we had to go someplace, and my father wanted to go somewhere where he could work as a coal miner, but my mother had her heart set on moving to Sheridan, and there was very little work for my father, so while we were still in Beats, they were building that flour mill at the south edge of Sheridan, and I worked there that summer of 1920 on that flour mill, the big flour mill at the south edge of Sheridan. It's abandoned now.
What did you do?
Well, on construction, they were just building the thing. And I rode a bicycle 7.5 miles, worked 10 hours, and rode a bicycle back 7.5. And I'd be so done in that I could hardly eat supper, and I just worried my poor mother that I worked all that summer and probably half the Sundays, 10 hours a day for $7 a day. And I really got enough money ahead that I got 2 years of college, and then I ran out of money, and my father was tied up with packing more work than Sheridan, and they bought a little house there that took all of the savings.
So you worked then and saved your own money to go to college.
Right after high school, I worked that summer, which was, well, I worked, you might say, 80 or 90 days. $7 a day.
Now, you went to live then in Laramie? Did you?
Well, I went to school at Laramie, and I just lived. I had a room in a private home, and lived in the dining room. They called it the Commons there. But when I ran out of money, I just didn't intend to go back to school because, well, in 22 and 23, there was a depression going on then.
Were you majoring in something special?
In civil engineering. And I was doing real good there. I was real good in chemistry, and I had a book that was presented to me as the best student in physics.
Oh, nice.
And I might have got back as an assistant, but something fell through. That's one of the little tragedies of life. I should have got an assistant out of it, but somebody else. Came in there, and it was somebody that later taught in Laramie, and his name is Carl Cinnamon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when this happened, you know, to you, you know, say you're there, you wanted to go to school, you know,
it was easy for me.
And you enjoyed school, and, you know, some things happen in life that you, you know, can't help, you know, where you, it makes it not possible. Normally, was this something that you were, you know, say, just handling on your own as far as, you know, trying to get the assistantship or whatever?
You see, when I was going to school at Laramie, mm-hmm. my father's mine shut down and couldn't get any work locally there, and I moved to town and spent what little savings I had on buying a house. And I was going to Laramie, and my father had 4 little kids in the house. From 3 to about 12 years old, just kids, and I was going to college.
And all over the country, it was a bad time anyway.
Yeah, it was a slow time. Even after I quit school, I couldn't get any regular work for quite a little while.
So you left then, you left the school after 2 years, and you went back to Sheridan?
I went back to Sheridan, tried to find work, and whatever work I got didn't amount to very much. I couldn't build up a saving to where I could go back to school, and Laramie was a small town. You couldn't get anything. Well, there were just lots of young people trying to get work in a little town like Laramie. Laramie was a small town way back in the early 20s. I'm talking about 55 years ago.
Things have changed.
When you went back to Sheridan and your went back to help your father more or less and your family because they had the little children, you did odd jobs. What would you say was your first real job then that you remember that you stayed with? Was it the highway job or was
it? Oh, yeah, then I started with the highway. Well, in 1923, I spent a summer working on railroad construction, that is. Somebody started the railroad from near Casper up through the Salt Creek Field and through Buffalo and Sheridan to Miles City, but that thing just fell through that summer. And then the next year, that was in 23, and then in 24, one of these Milwaukee engineers that was on this railroad construction, he got on the highway in Casper and he took me down there to work with his crew.
You said that you had to quit college and you went back to Sheridan. Tell us something about your father's circumstances and how he had worked to educate all of your children.
Well, at the coal mine, he had some of the more desirable work. He was on development work. He and his partner would work the day the mine worked, which was, it didn't work continually, but it didn't work 5 or 6 days a week, but it maybe only worked 1 or 2 days a week. So he'd work the day the mine worked and the day after, so he worked twice as much as a regular miner would. And then when later on, after everybody went up through school, when I look back now with my father, educated his family more than anybody else that lived in that camp with us for 13 years that we were there, from 1908 until the camp was moved out, abandoned in 21. See, I didn't finish college, but I had a younger brother that finished college, and I had a brother and two sisters that went through high school. The only one that didn't go through high school was the sister that I grew up with, Amelia. He finished it in 33, right in the center of the Depression. He wanted to get married and couldn't get a job. And a year later, he died with a lung sarcoma, 25 years old. Yeah, it is sad.
What did he have?
Lung sarcoma. Cancerous condition. I wasn't living with Miriam, and when I was called home, and I went to the hospital where he showed me x-rays where his lung cavity was blackened out except for his lung.
I understand.
Well, you don't understand because those things, you just won't understand.
But your dad did not want, you know, any of his children to work in
that. Well, not only my dad, but my mother didn't care about them either. She wanted them to have some education so they could see these two sisters, the only remaining sisters and brothers. I had seen my last both of my brothers, and I had these two younger sisters that were much younger than I. They went into civil service work, and they were up in Yellowstone Park for quite a number of years.
Now, they didn't marry coal miners either.
No, they married post office men.
I want to know now what your work. You worked two different summers in that construction, right? Railroad and then for the highway. And then you
got. There was a couple of years there that I just worked off and on. I couldn't get back onto the highway because in those days the highway factory worked with no money. Now they work with millions and without millions more.
But then you did start in the highway for that. When you worked a long period of time, was that in Sheridan?
Well, I started in Sheridan, but then they sent me down to the Wheelers in the Cheyenne office and the office was drafting me, and I was quite handy with that, and then they put me out to where I was on payment instruction, early payment instruction. And I got located, they sent me into this Rock Springs area in 31, and I was in here until, almost until I ended.
What was the Rock Springs like, you know, when you came here?
Well, I have to tell you, with the Lincoln Highway crossed the railroad right there at the Park Hotel, the pedestrian underpass is, and the highway went down through Blairtown, which I was in 31. And when I came back here in 32, the winter of 31, 32, they took me back into Cheyenne, and when I came back out in 32, I was in charge of paving the road from Rock Springs to Green River. And it's not the present road. I don't know how we got we had four or five roads since I was here in 31, between here and Green River.
Now, when you came in 32, and did you live in a hotel, or did you?
Oh, I stayed in a hotel and ate in restaurants. And I never got tired eating in restaurants because I laid off of fried meat. Of course, I'm talking about 45 years ago. Fried meat was different in the restaurant then than it is now. No, I often make the remark that for about 20 years I ate in restaurants and I never got tired eating in restaurants. Because you've got a choice in a restaurant. At home, when you go to eat, you've got to eat right before.
Now you were talking about eating, you know, in restaurants at that time. How many did they have in Rock Springs then? That was in 1930.
Well, like on restaurants, say about six.
Yeah.
See, I didn't eat in all of them.
Hotel.
Six was good enough. Because Rock Springs is a small town.
Now, most of the people that ate there, were they, you know, like maybe families didn't go out like they do today? Were they mostly single men, you know, that
were? Just workmen and loungers, you know, fellows that just wasted time. You could buy coffee for a nickel then, you know. So why not go to a restaurant for coffee?
They did that then just like they are now, those little groups of men that meet, like there's a little.
You know, when I went there to eat, I didn't go to see who the heck was eating there.
Pay attention in a
Not much, no.
Well,
Now, and like, you know, you had come from Sheridan. Had you been in Rock Springs before, you know, coming here with the highway department?
Well, I came here with the highway department in 31 the first time.
But, you know, what was your first impression of Rock Springs as compared to...
Well, I'd been to the highway department in other parts of Wyoming, and I knew what Wyoming was, an empty state.
So then it didn't bother you that it was not green, like Sheridan or anything like that? But
you know, when I first went to Laramie, I used to be so disappointed because there were no trees along the Laramie River. Up in the Sheridan country, even the dry draws have shrubbery in them, you know. And I went down there and I said, well, where's the river? There aren't any willows even on the Laramie River. At Laramie.
And so then, when you were 18,
but by the time I came here,
it didn't bother you, the vegetation or anything like that.
I was coming here for a job that I was looking forward to. And,
now, so most of the travel, say, between here and Laramie, or, you know, between here and Sheridan, was that by railroad?
I guess between here and Cheyenne, but then to go up north, you have to go into Nebraska and up into North Dakota, the South Dakota. That's where I used to go when I went from Sheridan to Laramie. I'd go from Sheridan through Gillette, through Newcastle, down to Edgemont, South Dakota, on to Burlington, and I'd transfer to another Burlington train from there to Sydney, Nebraska, and I'd get off the train there and get on the UP train. And come into Cheyenne, and one time when I did that, I noticed that the conductor took my whole ticket. And I knew the conductor had to change in Cheyenne, and when I asked him about the event, always he had. He don't make any mistakes. And about 10 minutes later, he came back with the rest of my ticket. So where I didn't have to buy a new ticket from Cheyenne to Lane.
There would go out. When you were here in 31, then, did you have a car?
Well, I had a highway car, and the only coupe that the highway ever had. Yeah, I was going to an oil job, and they bought me a brand new Chevrolet coupe with yellow wire wheels.
You really do that?
Did I have a job? We started on the road west of Green River under traffic to 42 miles. And I had a contractor that was 3 8-hour shifts a day, 7 days a week. And I had a highway commissioner's son that rode in the car with me. And I did all the work. Of course, I didn't do any pick and shovel work, but I had to keep track of everything, pay for everything. And then on the way back to Cheyenne, that fall, I had this one brother of mine that later died of one sarcoma. I went to a football game with him, and the highway superintendent saw me there. About 2 weeks later, I asked for a vacation in New York. Buzzard cut 2 days off of my vacation, and I spent all summer sweating on a damn boiling job day and night and 7 days a week. That was a thanks to the highway department.
Vacation.
No.
But were there roads, you know, at that time, say, when you were in this car that was a company car, were they rough?
And, they were just dirt roads.
Well,
if they were gravel roads, they weren't very. And we were just starting to pave in Wyoming. There was one road here that was already paved. It was from here to the foot of 14 Mile Hill just the summer before. The highway department had a crew of men in here that had paved the road with highway forces. But mine was the second hauling job, contract hauling job that the highway department ever had.
Now, what about downtown Rock Springs? You know, what, like along Elk Street now? What was that like at that time?
Oh, there was some pavement in Rock Springs already. Mr. N.W. Woodward was in here as a paving contractor. When I stopped at the hotel,
they did have paved roads in the town.
They had paved streets.
But the main roads then we were working on,
between towns?
Uh-huh.
Well, no, we were just beginning to pave. In Wyoming, it's surprising, Wyoming paved in just very few years, like maybe 8 or 10 years. Wyoming was one of the pioneers of asphalt paving in the West, more or less pushed by the oil companies that had the black. You see, crude oil was in two groups, asphalt-based, paraffin-based, and Wyoming up in the Bighorn Basin has got some of the best asphalt-based crude. And the oil companies more or less pushed the highway department into paving with this asphalt, so they could get a market. Wyoming wasn't a pioneer in the sense for the whole country, but it was a pioneer in the mountain areas. California and Oregon were really ahead of Wyoming. More money, more need for good roads.
Well, how
Wyoming.
Did the weather affect, the type of work that you did? Like, you were outside.
So, that one summer that we were here in 31, when we oiled 42 miles, we started under the Palisades west of Green River about the 10th of July, and we went 42 miles down that road under traffic. I've often said, and I still believe it, that we never had any showers on our operation till about the 20th of September, when it snowed on the doggone road. And we worked day and night. It might shower somewhere, but I mean where we were working. One of the driest and warmest summers. People sometimes, well, like last year, we talked about being warm and dry. I said, I wasn't 31.
That was more so. And then once that snow that came and with the water, you couldn't put on the asphalt, and that closed down the asphalt paving for the year.
We couldn't close it down because we had a foul up in an oil order, and we had the oil already here. We had it in the window, but it was stacked in the window. But it wasn't ready to lay down, and we had to wait until the road dried up enough so we could put up the ruts so we could lay the oil down there.
And then you did finish it in September.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a mess.
But once that was done, then you didn't do any more roadworks or scrapes.
No, you can't. See, we were hot mixing men now. We've got these plants where they mix the stuff up. We were mixing on the road. But when it got up to 90-some degrees, you know, people just don't realize how much heat there is in direct sunlight. If we'd have this black window, when it got real black and we'd worked to the vinyl, you'd get a handful of that and squeeze it and you couldn't hold on to it. Put a thermometer into it and the air temperature was 90 and the thermometer was 125 in the black window. Yeah, when we talk about solar energy, there's a good demonstration of what's in the sunlight. They're someday going to use that.
Now, did you want to ask somebody about the church?
Since we know you were Catholic, as a family, as a child, then was church a great part of your life, or just how was
Well, I had to go to church, but then in this string of five camps, there were only two of them that had churches, and our camp had a church building, but the priest didn't live there. He lived in another camp called Carneyville, and later called Cleanville. That's near Monarch. And this Henry Schillinger was the priest there. His residence was at Carneyville. And he'd have the first mass, Sunday mass, there, and then he had a horse and buggy, just one horse pulling this little buggy. And he'd come over the hill, maybe a distance of 3 miles, and we'd have a later mass in our little stone church in Beach. And he started me serving mass. He was the priest there when we arrived in 1908. He was a young Belgian. Those churches weren't parishes. They were mission churches. You're right. And he was there until May 1913 when he was transferred to Green River, and he stayed in Green River something like 40 years. But I served mass for 7.5 years up there until I got to be when I thought I was too big a boy, and there were younger boys to take her place. And I attended mass and attended church until I got down away from home down at Laramie, and then I kind of drifted away. Well, I miss quite often.
And then, somewhere during this time, or, you know, when you got older, you met your wife?
Well, she met me, I think.
You think she was waiting for you there.
Now, where did she live, your wife?
She was staying at the Pilot View Hotel. See, the mother built that. She built that Pilot View Hotel in Rock Springs. After their father was killed in November 21, and she built that two-story brick hotel building, and they moved into it the last day of 22, and the family kept it for over 50 years. And when I came back here in 32, someone mentioned, well, why don't you go to this place here? But they're reasonable in their rates, and it's right downtown, so I ran there. And it must have been the latter part of July in 32 that I got there. Anyway, when I got there, she was gone.
She wasn't there?
No.
So you met her, okay, at the Pilot View, so eventually she came back?
Yeah. About a week later, she heard that I was in town.
Oh, I see. She came running. I
know how you were.
And then... you said something about, you know, your wedding.
Oh, well, when we were getting ready to get married, this was some time. See, I came there in 32, but we weren't married until 48. See, I was in and out of here, and then I was more or less obligated with the family up there. And when we were about to... getting arrangements made for being married, Schillinger was a priest in Green River, and he'd come over and have a late mass at the Northside Church here, and Gidovitz would race up to Pinedale. He used to drive to Pinedale, like 100 miles. Wow. To Pinedale, and we'd go to Schillinger, would come out of Reno for this last mass. So I thought it'd be nice to have Schillinger marry us because of him being, I knew him as a boy.
Because you'd known him.
Years ago, 35 years before. And so we weren't married at a mass, but we were married at the altar after the usual mass. And during this wedding ceremony, while we were in the sacristy, and I was telling Schillinger about, I was a server for him, just like these two little boys were there, you know, and all Schillinger, he just bloomed, you know. Here Mary was coming down the aisle with her mother. We were still in the sacristy. Mary thought she was screwed up.
Now, did you have a big wedding, or did you
invite
a lot of people, or was it?
No, it was just a wedding there at the hotel that her mother, she had an apartment on the first floor there. It was just a small wedding. Nothing.
So you would take family and go into family in Cold Springs.
Yeah.
Now, did you, we want to get back to your background. Did you have special Polish things, or because she was Slovenian and it was, you know, it was everything kind of Slovenian in your food?
Well, it was her mother that was making everything. I had nobody in my future here at all. See, my parents had died in 46 and 47.
And
we were married.
Were they
when they died? Well, my father was about, see, he was born in 71 and he died in 46. He was nearly 76 years old. And my mother died the next year, and she was only 67. But my mother was ailing.
So they lived
rheumatism,
very long
lives. Rheumatism. And then losing those three grown-ups, that really took them down. Especially after my brother was killed over in Normandy. Gosh, they just went down.
But, you know, as far as, so her, your wife's family then,
maybe
custom things that they
have
served?
Oh, yeah. Sure, yeah. It was Slovenian dishes, if they were special dishes. It wasn't anything real fancy.
Maybe, since
since
Mary is here,
you
know, maybe
she
could tell us something
at the reception. You remember the food that you had. Like, did you have a dinner, a family dinner, more than you ever said? And you had a buffet or a reception?
No, it was more of a dinner.
You had a sit-down dinner, and then you served. What did you have that was special for the wedding then that you wouldn't have for an everyday dinner?
So many of the
pizza,
and then
what kind of meat
turkey.
Did we have? Turkey?
Yeah, turkey and ham.
Now, did you, you know, let's say in your marriage then, did you, you know, prepare foods that you were familiar with that your family had brought over?
Sarma
and different things, or
Slovenian some dishes, and then some other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like Ma used to cook.
That's what I mean. Eh?
Yeah.
Like homemade soup,
yeah.
And that sort of thing.
And then chicken and
most of our homemade soup comes out of candy canes.
Oh, I see.
Now, I told you about working with Dave Miller. He grew up in a coal camp out of Kimmer in dry country. And I grew up out of a coal camp in a couple of areas and raised gardens and raised crops. When I worked with him, you know, I could hear, occasionally I'd hear a bird. He'd say, where do you get that? I said, when you grow up in a country where you appreciate birds or even flowers on a hillside, that's with you all the time. You don't outgrow. He says, you know, "You've got something different than I've got." He says, "I can't listen to birds," and he says, "I can't look at a flower." He says, "Well, I can tell a bird by just the way it flies. I don't have to even see it. Just in order to in flight. And even yet, I'll go out in the country and not even marry it. I enjoy these empty hills over. Even today we went out and we rode to where the snow was on just one side of these hills, just a little bit of snow, and the way the light struck there. I enjoy things like that. And so many people, I don't know whether they're looking at it, a damn green dollar or what the heck, but they don't see those things. I says, even the difference in the sun, you know, in the winter the sun is way over here and the shadows are long, the summertime it's over here and you've got a different shadow, a different feel, and most people, they just don't appreciate that.
You know what I was going to ask him, and he's probably already answered it, and I was just looking at this paper, and at the very last it said, "What counsel for this generation would you give, like, for living successfully? You know, what would you say your advice to, say, younger people today, you know, to live a good life, you know?"
They've got to live a broader life. Too many of us, we get kind of funneled in. We see what the other guy is doing, and we want to do that because it looks like that's the popular thing to do. But don't do that. Look at what's around us, and be an open mind. Have an open mind with things, and don't be grasping for money, because money isn't everything. Money is awful good. But it isn't that darn good that it amounts to everything.
Do you feel, or maybe I'm putting something in, you were saying about appreciating all these things. Do you think that this comes back from when you were a child and didn't have money and things that were affluent, because, you know, it was hard for your father to live, and you enjoyed just seeing things?
Well, when I was a boy, I didn't think my father had a hard time making a living, because I could see other people that had so much less. Now we had, well, my father had a house full of kids. There were six of us eventually. But when I was a boy, there weren't six of us. There wasn't only about four of us. Amelia and I and the two brothers, and then later on the two sisters that I still have left came. But it never occurred to me that we lived so poor, because other people would have a house full of kids, and they didn't have a cow. They couldn't be bothered with a cow. And they couldn't be bothered with a garden, because maybe they'd move to another camp before they could get anything out of the garden. So why bother with a garden? He'd rather go down to the saloon and sit there. My father didn't sit in the saloon.
So hard work.
Well, he enjoyed working, and if he had a bottle of beer, it would loosen him up to where he'd have a kind of a giggliness to him. And boy, my mother could see that. "Boy, are you drinking again?" He says, "One bottle of beer."
Yeah, how do you feel, you know, about the changes that have taken place in Rock Springs today, as opposed to how it was?
Well, I like to see things grow, and my little community here has got resources that, when we were here, when I first came here, just like when we are on that road in 31, we went over those trauma beds. They weren't even discovered then. The other day, Mary and I went to FMC and over to Allied Chemical, and we were just astounded what a group of buildings is there, how much activity is going on, and what employment is given to people. I don't hold that against it. And then, too, look how it's been, how it's built up. Have you been out to this industrial park out there? You know, just beyond where the furniture store is? We went around in there. How nice that's all building up. You know, things look like as if they're growing and prosperous. Not rich, I mean prosperous. I mean it's getting better. Yeah, I like that.